This is Paul Green, WGN political analyst and chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Today we had a discussion of the future of print media with Tony Hunter from the Chicago Tribune, Jim Kirk from the Chicago Sun-Times, and David Snyder from Crane Chicago Business. Each individual said there is a future for print media, but they weren't very positive as to how long it would last.
Good afternoon. Come on, let's go. I look for motivation when I come to these, encouragement, so I come early and talk to folks beforehand, and one of my colleagues said to me, well, I've seen you speak before, you go on and on and on, so it didn't go so well. So I'm going to try to be brief, but the topic, I give credit to the City Club, they picked a great, great headline, and for the speakers, not so great, but... Seriously, I'm very proud to be here representing the Chicago Tribune Media Group and all of my colleagues back at the Tribune. And I'm very proud to represent them. And I'm very proud that we've embraced the disruption that's occurred in our industry. A big part of what gets written about is technology, but a lot isn't talked about with people and culture. And I'm very proud to represent our company because I believe our company has adapted to the disruption and the transformation that's required. So we tried back in 08, 09, we said, if we're a newspaper company, going to be tough sledding. We need to transform ourselves and be a business services and media company that happens to publish a newspaper. And I think that difference in the building has really positioned us well to deal with what we know is a lot of disruption in our space. Our purpose remains the same, to entertain, inform, inspire, empower consumers anytime, anywhere, and how they want it. And we continue to do that because we believe content is king. It will be king for a long time to come. And as long as we're unique, relevant, interesting, and we continue to go to market with our great brand, we believe there's a long future for our company. Mm-hmm. We also view print as a platform, and I know today is, you know, the title of the segment is about print, but we just view that as one of many platforms, and we believe that it's going to be largely driven by the marketplace in terms of what happens with print, and it's a matter of economics. And as leaders of our respective companies, it's our job to navigate that and to make sure that print continues to deliver great value for as long as possible. We've done a lot of things. I won't go through those, but maybe a handful of things I'll just point out. We have more content than ever before. We have more consumers than ever before. We're the number one news website in the Chicago DMA. So we are far from declining. We're very proud of those facts. And the key in the future will be for us to continue to evolve our company and our offerings to make sure we stay abreast of the marketplace changes and capture people when and where they want it. And we have a saying, we're very proud of our past, but we're more focused on our future. And we think that future is bright. Thank you, Paul.
Okay. Jim, you're up.
I hope there isn't a big news story because we've got about three tables of journalists here. I don't know who the hell would cover it at this point. But it's great to be here. I also agree with Tony in terms of being ambassador for not only the Chicago Sun-Times on the stage, but also for journalism and content and informing our readers. I think between these three publications, I see Seamus over there with DNA Info and some other sites, obviously, around town. The access to more information, the ability to access to more information now than ever before is pretty incredible and speaks well for, I think, journalism's future, and as does the Oscar Best Picture last night, which was very nice to see. As I've said for a long time and tell the newsroom often, you know, we are in this phase, this long transition, and still looking for how this will shake out. But the audiences we serve are multi, different platforms. we look at print as one of our platforms, one of our successful and important platforms. We have, over the past couple of years, looked at kind of a two-pronged strategy, that is to maintain and continue to grow print where we can, obviously grow digital, which is the big opportunity for all of us in this room, and at the same time find new ways to deliver more content to more people that is relevant and meaningful to their lives. And it just doesn't mean local content means content that is relevant in the here and now, as people can access us anytime, anywhere. We have to make sure that we are focused on delivering that content that remains viable to their lives. For us at the Chicago Sun-Times, it means focus, especially in print. We have what we believe are the best resources when it comes to everything from watchdog investigative reporting, political reporting, education, things that are important to people who live, play, and work in the city of Chicago. If it affects you in this city, we want to be that source of information no matter where it is. We have and still see a viable audience for print. We see it every day. I hear from readers every day. We've expanded that offering with news and content from partners. So we believe that partnerships with either former enemies or frenemies or however you want to look at it.
Thank you.
Yes. It's my largest vendor right here. We think that's a viable path for us in the future, whether it's, our recent relationship with USA Today delivering content that we haven't had in the paper in a long time, hearing from customers and readers about how much they like that content. We'll be drawing from Gannett's large, expansive network of journalism and journalists across the country. So we see the a pretty viable future for print, certainly for digital, working on both ends to deliver as much content as we can to consumers and making it relevant for our advertisers as well.
Round of applause. Very good. Not much need for editing so far, huh? Okay, Mr. Snyder, you're up.
First, I just want to say it's a true honor to be up on the stage today with people that are competitors but also friends. And even though we may compete in some areas, we're all in the same boat in terms of our quest to deliver the highest quality of journalism in Chicago. And both Jim and Tony have just done a wonderful job at that. I want to start with both, first a disclaimer and then two anecdotes. Because I'm going to be a little bit more bullish on print in the midterm than maybe Tony and Jim. First, a disclaimer is that myself, our management team, and all the wonderful Cranes colleagues that are in the room today wake up envisioning the day when print no longer exists. Everything we do is about diversifying our revenue streams, coming up with new products for the days when print will be zeroed out. That said, there's another perspective, and I'm going to share two anecdotes, one just from last night and one from 3 years ago. The one was from last night was during a break during the Academy Awards where I was sitting with my family. My wife and two daughters are here today, and they knew they were taking off school for some reason today, but it was only a vague idea what they were attending. And I explained it's this great group called the City Club, and I'm going to be here with these friends slash competitors, and the topic is the future of print. And without missing a beat, my 14-year-old Sarah says, "Well, there is none." So it's bedtime. And it occurred to me, Sarah's reading a book for school, To Kill a Mockingbird, a classic. And Sarah had a choice whether to buy that book online or whether to buy it hard copy. And she's reading the hard copy. So I said, "Sarah, you said print's dead, but you're reading this book." And she hesitated for a minute, and she explained this feeling that I think we all have about print. And that's that special tactile feeling that we get from whether reading a book or a newspaper or a magazine that's very special and very intimate and very different than that you experience online. The second anecdote was from 2013 when, as a management team, I asked everyone to give me a date when they thought Crane Chicago Business would no longer be printing in print. And the average was about 2020, but there were some people that said, you know, 2016 or 2018 will be the last time that we will be in print, which means that either this week's or last week's issue was an illusion or that we're still in the print publishing business. So fast forward from 2013 to 2015, and I look at our print business from last year, and our single largest growth category was not digital. It was print advertising. Our print advertising increased by 10% last year from a dollar perspective. So our print subscription revenue was up. Not by a lot, but in this area to have our print subscriptions rise is a home run given the broader industry trend. So, print is dead. You know, long live print. But again, we're not under the illusion that this will last forever. But we are in a little bit of a different spot than both daily newspapers who are represented here, and that is Cranes has a very fortunate niche in the marketplace. Being weekly in print and daily online is a beautiful, beautiful interaction from both a reader and an advertiser perspective. Is when you're a daily newspaper, you know, are you online, which is more daily or more immediate, where for us, being daily online opens up a whole new opportunity for readers and advertisers. And as Paul mentioned, our digital readership is about 4x larger than our print readership is. But it won't always be that way. But in the meantime, we have to maximize every opportunity we have in print. And we are reinventing our print publication under the great leadership of Michael Arn, our editor, and our editorial team. And the print edition that you see of Cranes today is very different than it was even 5 or 6 years ago. Then we were a newspaper. And today we're somewhere between a newspaper and a magazine. And we are giving people every day a value proposition that makes it worthwhile to pay $119 a year to be a print subscriber to Cranes, or to pay $20,000 a page or $22,000 a page to be a print advertiser. I think what's overlooked in all of these debates is the concept of the hybrid reader. Is we tend to kind of pigeonhole people that we're either print or we're online, when the reality is there's a huge market out there that wants both. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that even though that e-books are popular, print books are making a rebound. We're seeing it in the fact that we're out at events, and I meet someone who's 30 years old that may have a digital subscription but also has a print edition. So this concept of the hybrid reader is really important. And I think the risk we take as an industry is throwing in the towel and disinvesting in print too quickly, because the only economics that work for the time being is to have a healthy print business, even though it's going to go away, even though we need to do other things in order to plan for the day when print is not there. What gets me out of bed in the morning every day is two things. One is producing the best journalism possible with the best possible newsroom we have, and two is to provide a good rate of return for our owners. And I think the two are very much linked. Without the great journalism, there's not the great return. And for now, print still makes up the bulk of our revenues, and we still have to maintain whatever last opportunity there is in print while planning for the future and planning for a digital future and many other diversified businesses we have.
Okay, David, very good. We have our people here. Miss Amanda, you're coming in with your usual aplomb. Okay. Normally you never start with a publicist, but we'll start with Jim Turman, since he can't win the prize anymore because he's won too many. This one's for you. Whoever wants to answer it. Your industry received international praise last night as Spotlight won the Best Picture. Do you have the resources today to do similar in-depth investigations? Pretty good question.
Mm-hmm.
Don't all jump. Anyone?
I'll go first. I know, Jim, you have a similar answer, I'm sure. Back in probably 2008-09, we made a significant investment in investigative reporting at the Chicago Tribune. And then again in 12, we did another investment to expand because of the response we received from readers. So we have heavied up our resources on that content because we believe it's unique, it's differentiated, and it's required of us. We're a mission-driven business. We believe we're supposed to identify malfeasance and other activities and tell about those, tell the public about it. We've made that investment. We've also ramped up on the editorial page, which in many ways is also a way to uncover things that the public should know about. So we've invested heavily there and taken costs out that are not customer-facing. So we do have the resources. We will continue to invest in that area because we believe long-term that is something we should do, and it's part of our legacy to do that, and we intend to continue.
Jim, you have a comment?
Yes, I agree with Tony full stop there. The one thing that's interesting, if you've seen Spotlight and the editor at the time, Marty Baron, if assuming everything I've read, this is true. So, but there was just a little nuance early on in his tenure when he arrived at the Boston Globe when he talked about the importance of a story of priest abuse. And what he said first about that story was that it is a huge local story that obviously had international implications as it unfolded. But at first, his first instinct was to focus on local. And the area where newspapers are going to win always is when they focus on their audience, their local audience. And so we, too, have invested in our watchdog reporting because we believe it is the most important thing that a newspaper can do. We believe that it is the most important thing that readers want to understand about their community around them. And if it just so happens that a big story that goes international, because it starts at the local level, that's even better. And so we've talked a lot about in the newsroom about not doing as much commodity news, because the commodity news in this day and age is not a great use of your resources. What matters to people is not about how they can get sort of a national story that's written by your own staff member in Chicago where it's happening somewhere else, but about what Tim Novak, Dan Milopoulos, Chris Fusco, those guys can uncover on a local level of things that people have not seen or heard of before that affect their lives in a very meaningful way. That is a key to the future, and we are investing heavily in that. Doesn't mean we can cover the whole world, but we can cover Chicago and the state of Illinois. And at this time, as we've seen over the past several months, it's more important than ever to do that.
So, Paul, obviously all of us would like more and more resources, more editorial resources to do more investigative journalism. But as I mentioned, as we've transformed as an organization to posting all of our breaking news online, more and more, or almost all of our content in print is analytical pieces that come back. And yes, we do have a greater emphasis than ever on investigative, or at least what we would call in-depth reporting. But I would take a slightly different turn on the whole Spotlight example and say, do we have the resources to do it? I think longer term, what I worried about, are we going to be attracting the younger people, people that are entering college, to pursue a career in journalism? Because that's the feeder system that will provide the talent in order to continue to do great investigative journalism. And as I was watching the Academy Awards last night, I felt if only 5% of the high school kids that saw Star Wars saw Spotlight, maybe our industry and our country would be inspired and we'd be in a better place.
Okay. Good answer.
Gentlemen, we have a lot of questions. You're used to editors slashing in through. Just make these short paragraphs. No need to have multi-paragraph answers.
I'll cede my time to Jim Kirk.
You gotta play hardball. Nope. By the way, here comes more bias from Professor Green. We go to the professors who are in the audience. Linda Berkeley, Susquehanna University, Central Pennsylvania, and you think the City Club doesn't have a national reach. Welcome, Linda. I am a professor of communications, public relations specifically. Stay away from Terman. And see how young people choose social above everything else. What ways are you trying to reach not just young readers, but younger professionals who need to recognize the value of print as a reliable tool for message dissemination and engagement? Whew. You could handle that in 25 words or less, probably. David, you go first. You always are playing cleanup.
I hate to do this, but you're going to almost have to repeat the question.
Now you know why I see the deal.
Read it yourself.
Okay, Linda, with all due respect and as a fellow Pennsylvania, let me just get me... I see people choose social...
Is it 140 characters? Is she asking that?
Cowards die many times before their death.
Okay. Okay.
Do you think you got it now?
I do. And I'm going to attack the social media and the young professionals question very, very quickly because there are others that will probably add additional value. One is all of our key managers are on an incentive plan. And one element of that incentive plan last year and in this year also will be to increase the number of people following Cranes on the various social media outlets. We do very well on Twitter. We have some room to grow on Facebook. But growing that social media presence is a key strategic priority for us. In terms of appealing to younger readers, just the editorial mix in our paper has changed. The time when we covered Fortune 1000 companies week in and week out in Cranes, which we did for much of my 33-year history, is gone. And I don't want to generalize, but by and large, people don't really care about those companies as much as they used to. What they care about are the young, emerging, entrepreneurial, some technology, and those tend to be started by younger people. So when you start seeing yourself reflected in the pages of Cranes, I think it validates us as a media outlet that speaks to them. So I think it's a combination of what you're doing in terms of your social media strategy and then also what you're putting into your print and digital products.
I would just add to that, we view social channels as platform for our, and distribution for our content and also a way to market our brand. And if you have the content, the relevant content that's being reinforced by those channels, you have a much better chance at getting that audience back to print. Now, is it going to happen every day? No. But it is having a key strategy to use those channels effectively to reach that younger audience, as well as older geezers like me and Tony.
Thanks.
Just kidding.
No rivalry at all.
I'll take my time back now.
It's just having a smart strategy, but to also to David's point, it's that mix of content, and you have to make sure that you're appealing to as broad an audience as possible without obviously overextending, that it doesn't make sense that you're reaching too far.
I don't have much to add on the social side. We view that as well as a distribution channel. I think rather than think about, again, the platform and getting younger professionals to read print, it's how do we create something that they will consume and consider it a good experience and meaningful to them, and it's more about following the market versus trying to push the print to them, and it's more marketplace driven. And I believe we're doing a better job, but we have some more work to do. I have three millennials out of my household now, but we're in my household, and think that I'm gonna get that print product in their hands is, I think, a tough proposition. But creating great content and creating it in a manner and delivering it that makes them happy and the experience satisfying, we can do that, because it starts with great content.
Okay. Mainly because I want to see if I can still pronounce her name. Zizi Papa Carissa. Is that close? Papa Carissi. Thank you. UIC, head of the journalism department? There she is. Yeah, all right. The Philadelphia Inquirer made the news recently with its decision to switch to an economic model that resembles that of a nonprofit foundation. They're nodding. Therefore, this is not a sandbag. Your thoughts? Mr. Kirk? You haven't let off yet. Congratulations.
Well, having been part of a nonprofit news organization in town,
you're very qualified. Then.
I can tell you that Chicago is not Philadelphia and vice versa. So it'll be a great experiment to see how that works. I think we are still in a phase where in the nonprofit world usually means having somebody with very deep pockets funding that operation and who is patient to do so for a very long time. And DNA Info doing great, terrific work on a daily basis, and hope Joe Ricketts stays in there to keep doing that. Haven't seen the perfect model yet. Chicago, as I said, is a very different marketplace with you still have vibrant publications and content developers here, and so haven't, and along with DNA, you don't see that need for another player or someone to flip to that model just quite yet. So I think we're a long ways off from that here. That's just my opinion, having lived through something like that.
Anyone else want to comment?
I would generally agree with Jim. I think the one area where there perhaps is some opportunity, if there have been instances in public media and maybe in private media where foundations who had a certain interest in in-depth coverage of a topic will provide funding to a news organization either directly to a newspaper or through a third party like ProPublica that actually supplements the work done by in-house newsrooms. So
I would agree with that. And I think some of the Tribune papers, especially the LA Times, have benefited from something like that. That to me is I could see that as being a very obviously useful tool in the newsroom and a more viable hybrid kind of a combination.
Okay. Showing the fairness of this organization, we have David Cohn from the Union League Club. David, raise your hand. There he is, right there. Very good question. Do you think that the digital media affect the way journalists write? In other words, do journalists of the print era think or write differently from their digital counterparts? Don't all leap at once. If you want to all take a pass, we can do that.
Again, I'll start with the marketplace.
Go ahead, Tony, you're brave.
And I think, again, the platform that you deliver news and information in many ways also is linked to how people want to consume that information and the amount of time they're going to invest. There's so many news snackers these days that, and we love them, by the way, because that means they're coming to our brands, right? And they see value. But to think they're going to go through a long form news article or column when they're snacking, we'd like that, but I think all of our writers and columnists are finding a different way to write for the web. We call it digital first and then reverse publish to print. And so I think to David's earlier point, both the current journalists in the house are making that adaptation to the way they write. And we need to also get some folks, younger folks that want to be journalists, and let them come to the organization and bring new skills as well across all screens. So I think it's a combination of investing in our people we have today and also bringing in some new folks that are cross-screen, if you will, and have been taught that way. So it's a combination.
Anybody else? Okay, we got a lot of questions.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
If you want to jump in, you can, but
I'll just say great journalism has to be great journalism, and I don't think we should have a lower standard for what's printed digitally. I mean, I don't think that's what Tony was implying, but I think we have the same standards for our digital news product as we do our print.
Okay. Different type of question. Kate Jacobs, Boy Scouts of America. Where are you, Kate? There you are. No. You don't sell cookies, right? Okay. Next time, bring it on. Okay, here we go. What are the most effective ways for nonprofit organizations to share their story with relevant audiences in your publications? Good question, Kate.
Well, I think the key is to have a relevant story that hasn't been told elsewhere, first and foremost. And I think that, and this kind of gets to what David and I were talking about in terms of some of these supplemental things that nonprofit backing can do in terms of supporting journalism, is to, when you come to a news organization with a great story, is to have the data to really back it up. I would say that the one area where sort of the pullback in some newsroom resources that we've seen across the industry is that area of being able to have enough people to mine as much data as possible. And it's so crucial in the telling of a story and telling important news to people that I would encourage anybody who thinks they have a great story to tell to really back that up with some meaningful data that can be cross-checked by our journalists and used to help tell that story in a meaningful way.
David, anyone?
No, I think.
Terrific answer.
Yeah.
All right. This is good news and bad news. Tony, you're up. Good. The rest of
we're going to do good first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
But the good is
you
for
you got
all
an
three.
Exclusive on this one.
Thanks, David.
The good is for all three of you. Here you go. Denise McGowan Tracy, DMT Entertainment and Events. Denise, where are you? Raise your hand. Okay, see you in there. She is a subscriber to all three of your print publications.
Not right. You.
Yeah, we'll give her a round of applause.
That's the good news. Now, the
next
Jim
question.
And David are not quite part of this, so Tony is addressing you. But you can handle it. I found it interesting that Mr. Hunter led with entertain, following by inform. Is that the mission? Is this a fact at the reality of journalism and the media in 2016?
I told you good and bad.
Well, the good news is thank you for your business. We'll start there. And no, the order of my comments does not. I also said our mission. We're a mission-driven organization, and that begins with informing in a credible way. I believe we also can entertain, and I believe that there's many ways to entertain and still stay true to the journalistic quality that we uphold all of our reporters and columnists. But if you don't think that people come to content to be entertained as well, look at the circulation statistics on some of the magazines that are entertainment and the crossover between those folks and print newspaper readers. So I think we can play a role, but it is not at the we would not do that and walk away from standards. But I believe we should entertain. We should have people want to pick the paper up and say, I need to read today to see what they're saying, and also to get some entertainment. I do believe you can do both.
Good answer. I assume both you guys passed? No. Go ahead.
I would agree with that, and I think that this gets to some of the snacking that we see with readers as well. I do think that at the end of the day, these so-called sort of the viral, I'm just not sure how to categorize it, but the viral content that we has seen by some as a model of the future is not. It could be one of these things that, is not a long-term viable position. I do think at the end of the day, it comes back to authoritative, credible information that's important to your main audience. And then, you supplement that with things that are not going to be a drain on your newsroom and that obviously people are very interested in. I would say the Oscars being one of them today, for example, and the aftermath of all that. But that has been like that forever. It's just there's so much more of it now and so much at your fingertips. That's the difference.
David, you were curious?
Not a lot to add, other than I agree with Tony and Jim that they're not mutually exclusive. You can be both informative and entertaining at the same time. You know, on the front page of this week's Cranes is a story on the 50 most expensive home sales in Chicago in 2015. It's informative, but it's also interesting and entertaining because everybody likes to look, you know, at fancy houses and who owns them. So I don't think one's at the exclusion of the other. I think, you know, our franchise is in serious, in-depth reporting, but it can also be entertaining at the same time. So,
okay. Two quick points. We have a couple more questions. One, there's several questions that have already been asked in a different way, so we're going to skip over those. And also, we have several questions from people who work for one of these three publications. I would suggest you ask those questions in private. You don't get this high-paying job just by being some kind of wuss. All right.
Moving along.
Moving along. Brian Bannon, Chicago Public Library. Where are you, Brian? Right in the front. How do you define quality? Is this going up, down, the same in the industry and in your publication? David.
I think there's a bifurcation. I think the handful of strong publications continue to do high-quality journalism. Our dailies are investing in the right spots in terms of investigative journalism. I'm proud of the work we do every day. Obviously, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post. My fear is that middle market newspaper, the Clevelands, the Des Moines, the Baltimores and the Milwaukees of the world that served really important middle market communities and had great daily newspapers and were watchdogs in the cities that they served. And those mid-sized papers always served as the feeders to larger news organizations. And as the newsrooms and the editing talent has been eviscerated at those smaller newspapers, I think it has a ripple effect on the industry as a whole.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think in those smaller markets, you're seeing a lot less coverage of important topics. You know, it's unclear whether the Flint water crisis would have been uncovered much earlier had there been more resources put against that. You can argue that. I don't know enough, but just a little bit of what I've read on that. But the fear is that, you know, things, especially in smaller markets, you know, how your local tax dollars are being spent is very important to readers. And you got to wonder how that gets covered and if your newsroom is just a one or two people going forward.
Okay. Three more questions. Here we go. Allison, only one name.
That's me. Sorry.
It's okay. You're a Brazilian soccer player. That's okay. Sorry. Couple of fans. Okay. From the Chicago Architectural Foundation. Okay. Are you a Caymanite?
I am. I guess. Like, I mean, she's actually more so.
Okay. The New York Times, just a very good question. The New York Times distributed Google cardboard glasses, 50,000, 50K, and 50.
I think, was that how many?
50,000 issues, whatever, in 50,000 issues a few months ago. How do specialty ad sales partnerships figure into offering new value to print subscribers? We'll leave it at that. Are you guys offering any tchotchkes?
Jim, I think you got your glasses down there.
Now, not that the City Club would ever resort to something as cheap as that.
Well, I think there's a number of publishing companies that are looking at virtual reality and other ways to engage their audiences and communicate for marketers. And I've yet to see one, at least we haven't seen one, that's really taken hold and creates a meaningful opportunity economically. I think it's great that people are testing that, but I've not seen it really take off. So we've not dabbled in that. I don't know if you guys have.
No. I didn't get one delivered. I am a New York Times home delivery subscriber, and I didn't get one. I borrowed one from a colleague. I couldn't get it to work, and that was the beginning and end of that.
That's the downside of that. we've kind of taken the approach of being a fast follower just because the investment in something like that. We were happy to have the New York Times and Google experiment with some kind of technology like that. And if it takes off, we obviously would be part of that. But, you know, there's a lot of gimmickry out there, and you have to make that decision about how much you want to spend and who to spend it with. I mean, I do think partnerships are key going forward, and we've done that on the content side, and I think that's going to be a new norm for the industry and something everybody will have to get their heads around, but it can be very useful.
And what's old is new again. When I was doing a little research about book sales, and I know that it's not an exact analogy to newspapers, where you've seen a lot of the growth actually has been in audiobooks, and you're seeing the popularity of podcasts. And even though that it's not 3D, it's, you know, 1D, I know that I think our organization could do more in that area, and I do think it is another area where traditional news organizations can find an opportunity to do something new and different and also find a new revenue stream.
Okay. Two more questions. We have this one from Kaylee. Where are you, Kaylee? How do you pronounce your last name?
Netfinder.
Yes. And the name of your group?
S4.
We don't need to go any further. Here's the question. Does the future of publishing hold further specialization and separation of content into niche publications or intending to reach fewer
expanding your target audience of fewer publications or trying to separate and diversify
niche publications with smaller audiences? Sounds like a David Snyder question
to me. Okay. So we are a niche publication that's broadening our mission. Much of our history has been covering just pure business news. But increasingly, we have a very, very strong and intimate relationship with business and opinion leaders in Chicago. And we've used that as a platform to expand our digital coverage and our print coverage into new areas, probably the single largest being politics. You all know that Greg Hines, and I know I'm biased, I think is the most talented political reporter in Chicago. And we do a daily political email. And we're doing, Greg has a column in the paper every day. We now have Rich Miller from the Capital Facts. We're more into lifestyle coverage. We cover residential real estate heavily. Our Business of Life section covers people's lives beyond work. And I think the success we've had in building an audience of a certain demographic has given us the permission and the opportunity to say that Crane stands for more than just business news. It stands for news and a whole other areas of businesses, not just business coverage.
I would say from a daily news, at least from the Sun-Times perspective, that and you're seeing this at other dailies around the country, that it's harder to be all things to all people, and especially as discussed before, the area of commodity news and I think going more niche, going deeper into those areas that are important to your readers, such as politics, investigative, education, those sorts of things, and sports, that is going to be the key to help differentiate going forward.
Okay. By the way, the new editor of the Tribune, Mr. Dole, is over here. Bruce Dole, round of applause. Good job. This question is for Mr. Hunter, but you should pay attention. This is a City Club question. Carolyn Craycroft. Carolyn, where are you? Raise your hand. Where are they? Way back there, somewhere in the Northlands. Okay. Mr. Hunter, this is so good. Delicious. Why does the Tribune have so many huge whole-page articles more suited to a magazine? Who has time to read them?
Wow.
That is a sandbag City Club style.
There you go, sir. I got it.
I thought you did.
Well, interestingly, I was saying earlier in a conversation with Jay that it's in our business, it's half the people love it, and you write something, half love it, half hate it, but the half that loves it is hundreds of thousands of readers, right?
And so I would say while long-form journalism isn't for every story or every consumer, there are a number of our customers that love it, and especially in print. Especially in print. And I think the key is we need to figure out how we're going to go to other digital screens, if you will, and create the kind of experience that keeps people reading and wanting to get that deep story. And that is the Rubik's Cube, if you will, is high-quality journalism delivered to folks digitally and them getting through the entire long form of the story. So we get both ways, right? It's like that story wasn't long enough, that story was too long. That's why it's a beautiful job to have.
How about a round of applause for all of them? Great job. Hold it.